A quick warning before we begin. This episode will contain the names of people and places that are entirely fictional, which I'm sure to mispronounce often. I hope you'll find it in your heart to forgive me. Enjoy the show.
Between the years when the oceans drank Atlantis and the rise of the sons of Arius, there was an age undreamed of, when shining kingdoms lay spread across the world. Hither came Conan, the Cimmerian, sword in hand. It is I, his chronicler, who knows well his saga. Now let me tell you of the days of high adventure.
From Stephen R. Else Media, this is Hither Came Conan, treading the jeweled thrones of Hyboria beneath my sneakered feet, one comic book at a time. I'm your host, my name is Stephen, and I am back here with you so that we can continue our trek down Dark Horse Drive with a look at Conan issue number 2. This issue hit the stands on Wednesday, March the 24th, 2004. It sold for just $2.99, and it is entitled The Frost Giant's Daughter. It was written by Kurt Busiek, with art by Kerry Nord, letters by Richard Starkings and Comic Craft, and the colors were by Dave Stewart.
Into the boat!
Previously in Conan. Conan, just 16 years old, sets out from his homeland of Cimmeria for the first time and heads north. He is soon embroiled in a conflict between the Aesir and the Vanir when he comes to the aid of an Aesir woman and her baby, saving her from certain death, or worse, from a Vanir warrior. The young Cimmerian, after killing a few men from a Vanir raiding party, takes up with the men of Asgard, catching the eye of the young woman he had rescued, Henga, much to the dismay of Sijarl, an Aesir warrior who wants Henga for himself. So, since I've talked about the Frost Giant's Daughter twice already on this podcast, I figured that rather than write up another synopsis for the story, I do it a little bit differently this time, and I have decided to read the synopsis that's posted over on Wikipedia for the original Robert E. Howard story, because the Dark Horse version matches up quite well. So, yeah, here we go. Conan is a young warrior traveling in a war party of the Aesir, a barbarian people inspired on the main gods of Norse mythology. Shortly before the story begins, a melee has occurred on an icy plain. 80 men have perished, and Conan alone survives the battlefield, where Wolfhere's Aesir Reavers face the wolves of Bragi, a chieftain of the Vanir, another barbarian group based on Norse gods. Following his battle with the red-haired Vanir, Conan, lying exhausted, is visited by a beautiful, partially nude woman identifying herself as Atali. Upon her bodice, she wears a transparent veil, a wisp of gossamer that wasn't spun by human origin. The sight of her awakens Conan's lust, and when she repeatedly taunts him, he chases Atali across the snow-covered region. Mocking him with each step, Atali lures Conan into an ambush. Undaunted by the snare, Conan slays her twin brothers, two frost giants, and captures Atali in his arms. Atali calls for her father, Ymir, to save her. Before Conan can ravish her, Atali disappears in a stroke of lightning, which transforms the landscape and renders him unconscious. When his Aesir comrades arrive, Conan believes he dreamed of the encounter. Then Conan realizes he's still gripping a veil, the sole garment of the Frost Giant's Daughter. Okay, so this was a rejected Conan story. It was originally written as a Conan story by Robert E. Howard, and he submitted it to Weird Tales magazine, and they rejected it. Bob then changed the main character's name to Amra, and then retitled the piece as The Gods of the North, and then that was published in the March 1934 issue of The Fantasy Fan magazine. It was not published in its original form in Howard's lifetime, and I've never read the Amra version, so I don't know if there's anything different other than the change of the name. This story has been adapted into several comics, which I've talked about before, but I like giving this information out. You know, I'm very much a Jim Shooter type of podcaster, meaning that Jim always believed he would tell his people at Marvel Comics that every issue is someone's first issue. And that's why he always insisted that they do some kind of recap, either at the beginning of the issue or at some point during the issue, just a recap of what's kind of been going on. And I feel like every episode is someone's first episode of a particular podcast. This could be somebody's first episode of Hither Came Conan. And so I'm going to give you all this information again.
Lather, rinse, repeat, and lather, rinse, repeat, and lather, rinse, repeat, as needed.
This was first adapted into a comic in Savage Tales number 1 by Marvel Comics. That was published on January the 19th, 1971. It was written by Roy Thomas and drawn by Barry Windsor Smith, and it was black and white. It was reprinted in Marvel's Conan the Barbarian number 16 from April of 1972. It's a censored reprint because Savage Tales was a black and white magazine that did not have to adhere to the Comics Code Authority, while Conan the Barbarian was a comic book that did have to adhere to the Comics Code Authority. So they censored it, meaning that they took out the boobies.
Boobies?
And they added a new opening page to that story. It was reprinted again for Marvel Comics in Savage Sword of Conan number 1 from June of 1974. And it's a reprint of the Savage Tales story, but with the opening page from the Conan the Barbarian version. So yeah. 3 comic book adaptations just by Marvel Comics, though they're all the same story, just censored here and there and whatnot and all that. It was adapted again with Conan number 2, which is the book we're looking at now, so I'm not going to get into all that, but then it was adapted a third time for Ablaze Comics for the title The Cimmerian, The Frost Giant's Daughter, which was a 3-issue miniseries that was published in 2020, and it featured a reprint of the original Howard story in the back matter of those issues. That's about all I know, or that's about all I have the strength to look up as I talk about this story for a third time. So, yeah, how about we do Steven's favorite bits? Okay, so the first time I talked about the Frost Giant's Daughter on the show was the first episode, which when that episode was released, the plan for Hither Came Conan was a little different than what we're doing now. Originally, I was going to read each of the Robert E. Howard Conan stories and then talk about them one at a time and compare them to their comic book adaptations. And I did 3 of those episodes, The Frost Giant's Daughter, The Phoenix on the Sword, and The Scarlet Citadel, before I switched things up and I turned this thing into a podcast in which I would look at the comics, 1 issue at a time, starting with Conan the Barbarian number 1 for Marvel Comics, which was published in 1970. So that first episode, The Frost Giant's Daughter, it then became the first bonus episode. So that's where you can find it on the feed through whatever podcast app you use. You can find it with the other bonus episodes. Oh, and that episode was released on February the 17th, 2023. The second time I talked about this story was the episode in which I talked about Conan the Barbarian, number 16, originally published by Marvel in 1972. That episode went out on October 21st, 2023. But that original episode, when I talked about the Robert E. Howard version and the different adaptations, I believe that I picked the Dark Horse version as my favorite, I think. Now that I'm saying that out loud, I can't really remember. And it's quite possible that I chose the Ablaze version back then, but I don't know. It's been a bit, but let's give it a look. And as always, we will start with the cover. This is another cover by Joseph Michael Linzer. It features Conan at the bottom of the cover and Atali taking up the top 2/3 of the cover. She is naked with her sensitive bits covered by her hair.
Boobies?
And she's wearing her thin gossamer veil around her waist. I really quite like this cover. I like it a little bit better than the first one. Conan, for example, You know, I think I said in the last episode when I talked about Conan issue number one, that had somebody handed me that cover without the title on it, without any lettering, just the cover, I may not have understood from the first impression that it was a Conan book. But for some reason, I look at this one and yeah, there's no mistaking that that's Conan. I can't explain it.
Well, that's because you're an idiot.
The opening battle between Conan and the Vanir warrior is pretty awesome. And then we get to the title page, which is a double page spread. And it is a beautiful, it's a gorgeous, gorgeous, beautiful page. I mean, really, we'll get into what I think of the story here at some point, but the story itself is not at all one of my favorite bits, but I cannot ignore the art because it's just, it's beautiful. And I love how when we do meet Atali, I love how they portray her as she's running across the snow, across the icy plain. You know, we can see Conan standing in the snow up to his ankles, up to his calves maybe, whereas Atali is always running across the top of the snow.
Let's go play in the snow.
My most favorite bit, however, in this entire issue is the, well, it's not quite a splash page. It's the reveal of the Frost Giants. You know, Atali has Conan chasing her, and the entire purpose behind it is to lure him into a trap where her brothers, who are Frost Giants, will kill him so that they could give his heart to their father, Ymir, as a gift. And it's not the first time that they've done this. But the page where the trap is sprung and they reveal the Frost Giants, again, it's not quite a splash page. It is technically two panels. It's actually a splash page with a panel inset near the bottom of the page that shows Conan's reaction to the two Frost Giants erupting from the snow. They were hidden beneath the snow like big mounds of, you know, like a couple of small hills, and they just burst up out of the snow. They've got these tusks coming out of their mouths. They're awesome looking. And, you know, when I think of the other comic book adaptations, the Marvel version has these Frost Giants look like regular dudes, but maybe they're 7 feet tall, maybe 8. So not nearly as impressive as the Frost Giants in this issue. And then the Ablaze version depicts the Frost Giants as a pair of polar bears, which I found kind of weird. This version, however, yeah, I'm going to say it again. I would love this page as a poster. It's, you know, I pointed to in the last issue, the page of Conan cutting off that guy's head. It's like the first we see of Conan in the issue, how that was my single most favorite page of the entire issue. Same thing with this one. The reveal of the Frost Giants is the best bit of this book. Conan then dispatches the two Frost Giants with very little fuss. And while there's a part of me that wanted to see more of an epic battle, I think it kind of speaks to Conan's frame of mind at this time. You know, he's full of rapey lust to go after Atali, and even the appearance of two Frost Giants who, these are big guys. Conan comes up to maybe their thighs. That's how tall these dudes are. That's how big these guys are. And Conan is so, I don't want to use the word invested. That seems kind of a lame word, but all he wants is Atali. And the appearance of two Frost Giants do not deter him in any way. And with very little effort, he cuts them both down and kills them both. And again, there's a part of me that wanted that to last a bit longer. I mean, the entire bit with the Frost Giants, the two Frost Giants, happen over the span of 3.5 pages. The first page is, like I said, pretty much a splash page, and it's the Frost Giants erupting from underneath the snow. Conan fights them on the second page. They are dead by the third page. And on the fourth page, the top half of the page is Conan. He's, well, it looks like he might be killing the last of the two Frost Giants. He kills one, slashing it across the guy's neck, and he falls and he's bleeding out on the snow. And then Conan is standing atop the back of the other one, plunging his sword into the giant's back. When Conan, after he passes out, when Atali's father, Ymir, when he intercedes and saves her, Conan blacks out. And then when he wakes up, he has Njord and Gorm and some of the other icier warriors surrounding him. See, I guess this is something that they obviously don't explain in the synopsis I read, because the synopsis is for the original story. But in issue number one, when Conan sets out with the Aesir to go hunt down the Vanir raiding party, Njord, or maybe it's one of Njord's men, makes mention that word has been given to somebody named Wolfhere. And so his warriors will be joining them at some point. So between that issue ending and this issue opening, they have met up with Wolfhere's warriors. Conan has joined their band, and then they've split up. And looking back over the issue, I don't see where they explain why the two bands split up, but we find out that Njord and his warriors fought their way through an ambush, and by the time they came upon the field of battle where Conan and Wolfhere's men fought the Vanir, they, of course, found everybody dead, couldn't find Conan at all, but found his tracks leading away, and they followed the tracks, and they found him unconscious out in the snow. And, you know, they're asking him, why would you do that? Why would you just leave? Some of them assume that he has been taken over by some kind of madness.
You're a madman.
But Conan explains what happens, and he tells them that it all must have been a dream. But Gorm, who, I didn't mention this when we talked about the first issue, because I hadn't really noticed it until the second issue. He's got a scar on his head, and he mentions that who Conan met was Atali, the daughter of Ymir, the frost giant, and that she comes to the fields of the dead and shows herself to the dying, and that he saw her when he was a boy. He had his skull cracked on the field of Woolraven, and he was near death, so she really didn't want anything to do with him. She looks for the strongest warrior, the sole survivor, and that's who she makes as a sacrifice to her father. And then, of course, as the issue ends, everyone except for Gorm assumes that Conan, because he's got a big dent in his helmet, that he got knocked in the head really hard and he hallucinated the whole thing. But then Conan realizes he's still holding her gossamer veil. But that scene, I really enjoy the scene. The art, I think, is just wonderful looking, and there's really nothing going on except for a bunch of guys, Northmen, barbarian Viking types, just in the snow talking. But there's a panel on the very last page that just is Gorm's face as he is saying that the Sumerian has seen the Frost Giant's daughter. And it's a wonderful panel. If I'm looking at this issue and I'm looking at my favorite bits in regard to the art, the reveal of the Frost Giants is my favorite, and this one panel of Gorm is probably my second favorite. Just that look on his face. He's just so amazed and in awe that Conan not only witnessed the Frost Giant's daughter, but survived to tell the tale. And that's how the issue ends, which also ends my favorite bits. Hither Came Conan will return after these messages. According to the latest report from falsifiedstats.com, there are currently 12 million active comic book podcasts clogging up the internet superhighway, and 2.3 million new comic book podcasts are being created every single day. That's a lot to choose from, and yeah, it can get a bit overwhelming, especially since most of them all sound the same. You know, it's usually one to five guys, and they're sitting around, and they're just talking about their top picks from all the new issues that hit the shelves that week. If you're looking for something a little different, then let me tell you about Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow. Mike travels the globe and visits comic shops along the way, talking to the owners, the managers, or really just whomever happens to be minding the store that day. And it's through these conversations that you'll meet some wonderful people and learn how comic shops are run in places like Murfreesboro, Illinois, Pearl City, Hawaii, and Liverpool, New South Wales, Australia. But even more, Mike takes a comic book recommendation from each shop. He reads the comic, and then he gets together with a special guest or guests to discuss the comic in question. So do yourself a favor and check out Mike's Comic Shop Roadshow, a truly unique comic book podcast among billions of the same old, same old. Find it now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
Comic books in my hands, man. The smell of back issue pages, man. Comic shops, I've seen my share, man. I've been everywhere.
I'm Mike, and I approve this message.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
And now back to Hither Came Conan. So, final thoughts on the issue. It looks gorgeous. I can't speak the praises of this art team enough. And I'm fairly certain that, you know, there's no inker listed on this issue. We had an inker for issue one, but there's no inker listed here, which one would assume that that must mean that Carrie Nord did both the pencils and the inks. But I feel like I read something back then that it was just Carrie Nord's pencils and they colored his pencils. There were no inks on at least this issue. I don't know about the rest of the series or even the rest of the six issues that we're going to read. But I do remember, I feel like I read that at some point. They were kind of making a big deal out of the fact that they had decided at one point that we're just going to color this book without inks. We're going to color it straight from Carrie Nord's pencils. And it really does give the book a certain kind of feel that I think really, really helps out the aesthetic of this being a sword and sorcery fantasy type book. It works. I'm not always a fan when I see colors and no inks, but it really works on this one. As far as the story itself, I have never made a secret of the fact that I just simply do not like this story. Not at all. And it's mainly due to the fact that Conan, had he been able to catch Atali, he would have raped her. Period. There's no bones about that. There's no question. That's what would have happened. And I feel like I've talked about this quite a bit. Talked about it in the first episode. Had a particular opinion about how I interpreted this issue. I got some emails from folks, not many, who defended Conan's actions. Read the story again when I got to Conan the Barbarian number 16, and not only did my opinion not change, I felt there was more to it. So, you know, I got a couple of emails back in the day, but I see this online all the time. Whenever Frost Giant's Daughter is brought up by anybody who point out the fact that Conan was about to rape Atali, there are fans of Robert E. Howard and Conan who come to Conan's defense. Not all readers, but there are a contingent of them. And the defense that they typically use is that Conan was magicked into it, that Atali is using her magic powers, her sorcerer's ways, to turn him into this lustful, rape-happy madman in order to get him to follow her so that she could lead him to her brothers, the Frost Giants, so that they could kill him, so that she could then present his heart to her father, Ymir. So really, what the defenders say is that it's not his fault. And besides, she's the bad guy. And yeah, that's what I hear over and over and over when fans defend the story. And again, it's not all the fans, but there's a contingent. I've also talked about that while, yeah, I get it, that makes sense. But to me, it's not really a defense because by the time I got around to reading Conan the Barbarian number 16, my opinion morphed into, well, all right, it is my opinion that what Bob Howard is really trying to say with this story is that women who dress provocatively, women who like to go out and have a good time, women who tease men, and I'm saying tease in air quotes, women who tease men into believing that they want to have sexual congress with them, and then change their minds once the dude's all worked up, that those women, in the end, they're asking for it. And men, at that point, have no control over their actions, and they are not to blame if they decide to ignore the woman's emphatic cries of no and have their way with them. In other words, it's all her fault. It's the woman's fault. She was asking for it. I've said it all before, and here I am saying it again. And What completely mystifies me is why comic book creators continue to adapt the story. You know, Marvel adapted it in 1971 and then reprinted it two more times. Dark Horse adapted it in 2004 and Ablaze adapted it in 2020. And my question is why? Is it because it's a Conan story? Is it because Robert E. Howard wrote it? And so, yeah, you gotta adapt it. Because, I mean, you don't have to adapt it. That's what I say. You can choose to skip it. Or better yet, if you feel you have to adapt it, how about you make it clear in the story that Conan is wrong, regardless of the circumstances? I mean, how about we don't tell a story that teaches people that rape is okay in certain situations? And don't tell me that this story does not teach that, because again, I see it over and over from a contingent of Bob Howard Conan fans out there when they defend this story by saying that Conan had no choice, which again is another way of saying she was asking for it. And I'm just reading between the lines here, folks. You can interpret the story however you will. You have that right as a free-thinking human being. For me, my interpretation is that the Frost Giant's daughter excuses rape. And it's a bit conflicting for me because a year or two ago, I started to watch the movie High Plains Drifter with Clint Eastwood. It's a movie I'd never seen. Every couple of years or so, I like to sit down and spend a week or two just watching Westerns. And there's a handful of them that I watch every single time. And a year or two ago, the last time I did this, I thought I would try to expand my Western watch. And I've heard a lot about this High Plains Drifter movie. And so I sat down and I started to watch it. And near the beginning of the movie, Clint Eastwood, who is a drifter, drifts into town. He kills some men. And then a woman starts, I don't remember the exact circumstances. They're in a barn where his horse is being kept. And she comes up. I think she's teasing him and stuff. And then he just ends up raping her right there in the hay. And at that point, I'm like, nope, I'm done with this. Not watching the rest of this movie. And then I went out there on one of the social media platforms and I talked about it. And immediately I had somebody come back with a response of, so you have no problem with him coming into town and killing people, but the moment he rapes somebody, that's where you draw the line. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly where I draw the line. And while I understand the point, because who am I to read these stories and enjoy Conan killing bad guys because the bad guys were asking for it. And yet I get all high and mighty about the rape part of it. And I don't know. I can't defend that. I mean, I feel like in this story, had Conan caught up to Atali and then killed her, you know, just chopped her head off so that she couldn't lure others to their deaths, I would have been okay with that. Would have been perfectly happy with that. I might have even applauded him. But the rape, we all have a line, folks, and I can't quite articulate why I feel one is worse than the other. I just do. Feedback@hithercameconan.com. If you agree, if you disagree, let your thoughts be known. But yeah, I told myself I wouldn't get all worked up this time around, and yet here we are. But for now, with that, I really have nothing left to say about Conan number two. I would have liked to have gone deeper into it, but again, I've talked about the Frost Giant's Daughter twice already. It's not my favorite story. It's one of my least favorite ones. I wish they'd stop adapting it, but I guess I just have to make the choice. If at some point Titan maybe decides we're going to adapt Frost Giant's Daughter, maybe I'll just skip it. But yeah, that's it. That's all I got. This episode is done.
Everybody out.
In our next episode on Friday, March the 8th, I'm going to be looking at the Savage Sword of Conan number one from Titan Comics and Heroic Signatures. This is a black and white 80-page magazine-sized Conan-centric anthology comic that's carrying on the tradition started by Marvel Comics back in the 70s. Per the solicitation, this issue features an epic new Conan tale from John Arcudi and Max von Fafner. It has the rousing return of Solomon Kane, written and drawn by Pat Zerker. And it has a short prose story from Jim Zub. And so, yeah, I am really looking forward to talking about this issue. We then return to the Dark Horse Conan run next week on Monday, March the 11th, with Conan number 3 from April of 2004. And the title of that story is At the Back of the North Wind. And hey, if you don't want to wait a week, second level members of the super secret Steven Society not only have access to that episode right now, they also have access to the following two episodes looking at Conan number 4 and Conan number 5. Join today by using the link in the show notes or just go to secretsociety.hithercameconan.com. Second level memberships are just $2 a month and all episodes are ad-free. And don't forget to give the podcast a rating over at Apple Podcasts. This helps listeners just like you find the show. And so, until next time, folks, keep your swords close by, never stop treading them jeweled thrones, and most important of all, be nice to each other. Bye. I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Hither Came Conan. Questions and comments can be directed to feedback@hithercameconan.com or come join us on social media. Just look for @ConanPodcast on Twitter and Blue Sky and @HitherCameConan on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. If you enjoyed today's episode, please rate the show over at Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening. Donations to the show can be made at donate.hithercameconan.com or become a member of the Super Secret Steven Society and get episodes early and ad-free. Join now using the link in the show notes or go to secretsociety.hithercameconan.com. Memberships start at just $1 a month.
Many wars and feuds did Conan fight. Honor and fear were heaped upon his name. In time, he became a king by his own hand. This story shall also be told.
All right. Here we go. He is soon embroiled in a conflict between the Aesir and the Vanir. He is... I hate that word, Aesir. Aesir, stupid fucking word, name, or whatever. Where Wolf hears Aesir...
Just don't think I can move through life knowing that a guy named Steven did this to me.
How could you let this happen, Steven?
Enough talk!